I'm off my game today.
No, you're not.
That's true.
People are going to have to start making better content.
I think we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
When you program for everyone, you program for no one.
I think it's that we're a purpose-driven platform. Like, we're trying to get to substance. How okay. was that? Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
This is marketing therapy right now.
It really is. Yeah.
What's up? I'm Laura Carenti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome back to Adlandia. Today, we are talking to Nick Kwa, none other than Nick Kwa, the guy who was probably one of the first kind of signal in the noise signals for podcasting. And we met Nick a few years ago when we did GE Podcast Theater and then when we started Adlandia. And he's just got a really clear perspective, not just on podcasting, but I also think about what's going to happen in the future of the media space, maybe in light of or in addition to audio.
Totally. Yeah, I think the decoupling of those two things, and I know something we've talked quite a bit about, is that, you know, many brands and advertisers and creators are saying, you know, what's my approach to podcasting? It's not necessarily about what is your approach to podcasting, it's what's your approach to audio, and how do you think about podcasting as a mechanism to deliver a narrative within that. Earlier in the week, Nick and I got to sit on a panel with the New York Times during for Advertising Week, and we're going to talk about it on the show. Has it hit the point of maturation? Are we in a mainstream phase of podcasting? It'd be really interesting.
What
to hear
is Nick, mainstream?
Right. What is mainstream? And to get Nick's take on that. But I still think we're very early days, and we have a lot to learn about how to leverage this channel to create conversation and engage with consumers.
So if you don't subscribe to Nick's Hot Pod newsletter, you should, because I always found when I started researching what was happening in the audio space like 3 or 4 years ago, he was this, you know, he had a community and he was this voice that kind of cut through all the mystical shit of what was happening. So with that, Nick Kwa.
We'll be right back.
And we're back in the studio with none other than Nick Kwa, founder of Hot Pod and contributor to Vulture. Nick, welcome.
How's it going?
So great to have you on the show. We were just reminiscing about our first time meeting you back at the Adlandia launch party, which is almost two years ago now, which is incredible to think about. And obviously the space has evolved tremendously since then. But Hot Pod, your podcast industry must-read newsletter, has just exploded. Can you tell us about the journey you've been on? And before you get into that, really why you decided to create the newsletter?
Well, I don't know if it exploded. It's more just like grown slowly month over month, year over year, much like podcasting in general. I got into it because back in 2014, I was working in another newsroom and I had been a listener to podcasts for a long time by then. And the first season of Serial had been sort of reaching its apex at a point. I believe it was November. It was somewhere in like its sixth or seventh episode. And a good number of mainstream outlets started writing about Serial and the podcast industry writ large. But it didn't quite map with what I understood about the community. And it sort of like just drove me to build a small sort of free side project just to like get some thoughts out and essentially blog. But after a while, more people started subscribing. And after a while after that, people from WNYC and a few other sort of like podcast companies, nascent as they were, started subscribing. And I just sort of never stopped publishing since.
What have you noticed over the time of writing about the industry people are most curious about?
I think I've always thought about Hot Pod as a community paper. It breaks news sometimes, but it doesn't always, like, and I try not to do it very often until it's important. But I usually sort of design it as basically a water cooler for various people from the community to sort of look at an issue and sort of understand the lay of the land in a given week. I try to sort of put in a lot of stories about how people are thinking about the space, how people operate within the space. Sort of my bread and butter work has always been, look at this team, this is how they're thinking about things, this is what they're doing, and this is what they're worried about. But sometimes I step in to do sort of like 30,000 feet analysis into what I think is the bigger picture and try to draw lines that readers can't otherwise draw for themselves.
the world of podcasting in the last 4 years has completely changed. It's kind of mainstream now in terms of at least people listening, talking about it, media companies getting into it, journalists getting into it, etc. What do you think right now are the kind of biggest signals of where the industry is headed?
It's actually really interesting because I do wonder whether it has achieved a sort of mainstream status. And I do wonder about the larger question of what it means to be mainstream. And, you know, 2018, as far as the media goes, we sort of function in a really like fragmented media ecosystem right now because the internet has basically flattened everything. But the thing that's been super interesting to me over the past 4 years is I think we're going to look back at the 2014 to mid-2018 as a sort of really interesting in-between period. And now we're about to see, you know, what scale really means and what sort of an industry growing into something that has a bigger architecture really means. The biggest signals to me are, you know, Our Heart Media acquiring Stuff Media a couple of weeks ago. That's a significantly... One's a massive radio giant acquiring a veteran, very sort of hard at work, very highly functioning podcast publishing company. And that to me is sort of a harbinger of things to come. I think we're going to see a lot of big legacy media companies buy its way into the space and inject a lot more resources into it. And the question then would be how do you sort of grow this thing in a way that hasn't been just in a much quicker way, right? Like the past 4 years and the past 10 years before that has largely been a story of the industry or the community organically trying to figure things out on its own. Now we're going to sort of see fire from a different direction.
And in your opinion, that fire from a different direction, is it the same model that has been followed, like a more ad supported model that's been, you know, the decades, you know, 60, 70 years of media? Or do you think that's going to change?
It's one of those situations where I think advertising is not going to go anywhere. It has been sort of the predominant business model for so many different kinds of media formats and different kinds of industries. So what we're going to probably see on that front is what we've learned from ad tech over the past 10 years and the rest of the technology industry being an attempt to apply it to podcasting, which has largely sort of developed a really strong reputation and value proposition around, you know, host read ads that are, you know, intimate and baked into the medium and baked into a podcast episode. We're going to see sort of those two models clash and figure out what comes out from that. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that the value proposition will change as a result. All the sort of messaging around podcasting's intimacy and the effectiveness of its ad reads is going to be substantially challenged when you sort of apply programmatic thinking to this. But hopefully, you know, the numbers will lead to a better place and hopefully there'll be productive outcomes. But I think it's like a 50-50.
How do you think podcasting has changed journalism? I mean, if you look at New York Times and you look at The Daily, I think The Daily probably got a lot more audience for The New York Times than The New York Times was getting before The Daily.
I think you can cut into this question from two directions. One, what it offers legacy news companies and legacy journalism organizations is this opportunity to, as you mentioned, reach new audiences. And largely that comes from this dynamic in which newspaper organizations have been around for a long time have often adopted like a voice of God kind of approach, and it's sort of a monolithic, faceless, we are the authority on a subject style of news distribution and information dissemination. And we're in a moment in not just America, but the world where trust in institutions are challenged. And what audio broadly sort of offers is this opportunity for people to connect with institutions, people to connect with journalists, and people to sort of really form an emotional bond with this side that works really hard at producing the news, but has historically been sort of embattled by sort of people who question truth and things like that. But sort of if you take it from the other direction, it's sort of this in-between place between old legacy news organizations and sort of the bloggy, rapid-fire news organizations or sort of new media companies that sort of came to age in the mid to late 2000s. Places like Gawker, places like BuzzFeed. sort of sites that really built their identity around being one of the people, being very voicey. I feel like The Daily in specific has been able to sort of build a space where it feels like this in-between ground, that you're talking to a real person, that this person has a voice, but this person isn't isn't irreverent, and it's still sort of able to embody authority in a really interesting way. And I think that's the wedge.
What are your thoughts or sort of recommendations or best practices, given what you've seen in this space, for brands who are eager to either dip their toe or go all in? Because I think over the last 2 years, we've seen many different brands across many different categories go at this in different ways.
Mm-hmm. My recommendation would be to trust the natives of this community. The heart of this product is an emotion, and the heart of this product is like an intimacy of relationship. And so that is what you're either trying to develop if you were to create a branded podcast of your own, but that's also what you're trying to buy into. And as anybody in a sort of a healthy, nurturing, long-term relationship can tell you, it's sort of like, it's a lot about listening. It's a lot about being attentive to how this community works and how this space does its job. And I think I would recommend just like listening to not just podcast publishers, but listen to what podcast audiences want, and that's kind of what you're renting into at the end of the day.
What are your thoughts on what's happening in the programmatic space in audio, in podcasting, kind of as the maybe counter to that?
Yeah, I don't know. So I'm a relatively young person. I'm sort of the kind of person that really tuned out of commercial radio, because I find radio ads just extremely assaulting and overwhelming and just unpleasant. And so that's my memory, and that's my relationship with the notion of programmatic, right? Like I came up of age in the internet when sort of banner ads were like not great at its peak assaultiveness. And so the question is sort of, can you use programmatic to scale quality and intimacy? And I don't know. I think this is unproven territory. There is definitely a model into which programmatic could work for a technology like this, but you're not scaling quantity, you're scaling quality. Okay. And so that's the difficulty here.
And therefore, totally. It changes, I think, the nature of programmatic, right? So right now, it's about chasing eyeballs and volume. I think that, you know, Laura and I have talked about a lot in the past that programmatic is the right idea executed in the wrong way. Right. And that's in digital, right? Ad, you know, banners and things like that. And I think it's possibly going to happen in audio, unless there is some kind of genius around creating experience and letting that drive a targeted buy.
I think there are two things that might bring us to a better place with programmatic, right? Like, I think the first thing is if we see really strong, clear leaders building out a model that both sort of respects the medium's intimacy and also is able to utilize programmatic in the right way. If somebody can figure that out and be really strong on messaging that this is how it's going to work, it will lead to like the creation of norms around how you use programmatic that could be productive. So I think that is something that we should be looking out for. And if we see it, we should elevate it. I think that's important.
That to me only gives more thought around subscription models and people saying, you know, we'd rather pay than listen to the same sort of experience Nick was alluding to within commercial radio. So Nick, curious to get your thoughts on the subscription approach and if you have any idea or insight into those that may be thinking about this and that you're excited for.
I've seen and heard of a bunch of different plays within the space right now that's podcast specific. There is a company called Luminary that's trying to build sort of a paid platform for podcasting. They literally want to be the Netflix for podcasts. There are a bunch of other companies that have similar plays. Stitcher has Stitcher Premium, which essentially offers like bonuses and interesting exclusive shows that kind of resides on top or to the corner of their overarching ad-driven model. I wrote a column about this a couple of months ago. I think we're looking at the wrong models. I think we're looking at the wrong metaphors. We shouldn't be drawing from things like Netflix, because they just have different histories of how they get to where they are. we should be looking at things like Headspace, which is a sort of meditation app that's able to slip into people's lives in a very specific way. And it sort of fits into a very specific use case for a lot of people that would drive them to say, yes, I will pay $5 or $6 a month for this content. I think that's the sort of model for where people should start before moving up market. But I haven't quite seen anything that's podcast specific that's encouraging or that's interesting.
Do you think there's a new model that needs to be built for Amazon and Google Home and those types of things in the podcasting space? You know, right now there are a lot of podcasts that are available on Amazon, for example. I'm not sure that the same experience that we hear when we plug in our phones and listen to a podcast should be the same experience as when you're listening to it in your home.
I think that's right. But I think there are some things that do retain. There are ways in which I can activate Alexa skills that overlap with the nature of it being on demand, right? Like one of the sort of bigger value propositions of podcasting is sort of like you're able to you made a choice to listen to this thing, and therefore it's something that you already bought into and you have a vested relationship into trying this out, as opposed to something that's more of a linear stream that you catch onto and you either choose to opt out or just switch around if you didn't like what you were listening to. The way I've been trying to think about this is sort of the shift between desktop to mobile. The way that we had sites specifically designed for desktop that never really designed specifically for mobile. And as a result, there are breakdowns in that relationship when one carries to the other. The question, I think, is sort of how do you either restructure shows or redesign shows that could fit in both environments, or how do you build things specifically for Alexa? There was a point that was raised in the AdWeek panel that Laura and I did that was so super interesting, which is decoupling the idea of podcasts from the idea of audio. I think that's definitely an inevitability that publishers need to do that, especially not just when once smart speakers really sort of become the first touch for most audio consumption, but also when platforms like Spotify or Pandora really, really, really sort of buy into and co-opt space previously occupied by podcast publishers. And, you know, it's sort of, I think it's all audio at the end of the day, but it all has to be sort of a little bit more thoughtful than what's going on right now.
Thinking about the use case and the utility will also then, I think, force brands to think about it's not good enough just to create podcast content or audio content. It's a strategy, right?
Yeah.
Like how are you deploying your message accordingly? So
I agree. And I think, you know, Nick, this is something I'd love to get your opinion on. We have been, for lack of a better term, in a really linear, I think you actually said this earlier, like a linear media world. I personally think, and maybe it's more of a hope, that audio is going to actually break that. And so we're going to be looking at more non-linear types of media. And that could look like something where you start franchising not only a brand, but a talent or an idea. So if like I'm headed into a meeting with a CMO and I need to talk to them about something that's happening trend-wise, there's no reason I couldn't have Sarah Fisher give me the top three things, right, as I'm walking out the door that I need to know about X, Y, and Z. All of a sudden, those voices, if you will, or that content and IP becomes almost just omnipresent. What's your opinion on that, Nick? I mean, do you think that's possible and prompted by this kind of potential in audio?
Yeah, I think it's super interesting because I feel like we were always trending in this direction, regardless of the specific context of the media industry. Going back to what we were talking about earlier, sort of trust in institutions and trust in authorities have sort of been declining over time. And I think what has replaced that is this notion of, you know, trust in individuals. And, you know, folks kind of say like always invest in a person kind of situation. And I think what we're seeing, I don't quite know how this translates to every media company or every new media context or different kinds of programming. But I think we're seeing sort of really interesting new media companies being built around individual voices. And one of the best examples of this is probably Axios, as you were talking about Sarah Fisher. It's not just her, but they've also built sort of built architecture around Jonathan Swan, who's their political correspondent, and and Mike Allen, who's the founder, a co-founder of Axios, where they go into the world, you can read them in a newsletter, you can see them on TV, you can see them on Twitter. They probably have like four or five different other touch points of how they're distributing the information that they know. And you know, it's all sort of value being carried outwards into all these different directions. The question is sort of how do you sort of monetize all of those? And the question for me in a broader sense is also how do you adapt this model to other kinds of media contexts and programming styles and genres? Because I don't think it's a model that could fit for everyone, but it is, there's something intriguing about the truth that there is trust in the individuals there.
Nick, one of the things you and I were chatting about on that panel was around the idea of formats and the ability for people to get creative and not just thinking about it as talking heads or interviews or news style content, but some of the mechanisms that have been used by people like Panoply, where they've built binge series around Empire and Blood, some of the relationships that are starting to happen with Hollywood that we see Gimlet moving toward. What are your thoughts around sort of non-news, sort of the fictional storytelling and the ways people are really getting creative with format?
Right, so we've seen like a bunch of, we've historically seen like a bunch of really interesting innovations over the past couple of years, specifically with podcasting. So Empire Blood dropped all their episodes at once, but so did S-Town, I believe March of last year, where they dropped this entire novelistic story down in all seven chapters in one day, and it ends up being this sort of really remarkable experience, which is, you know, in hindsight, what do you think about it? It's like really hard to monetize. Also, it's hard to sort of evaluate the risk of whether you want to get an ad buy on that. But we've also seen, like, I think even something as early as Comedy Bang Bang, like the sort of a really popular comedy podcast with Earwolf, they really play with how long you can go, how deep you can go, different segments, and sort of blurring the line between something that's fictional and something that's non-fictional. There are all these sort of different elements that carry different amounts of risk to the podcast or the genre, the format that they're using. I think for me, the prevailing question is sort of where would the incentives for more innovations like this come from? Because there are increasing questions about the cost to really build new experimental products of a high quality like this. And for a lot of podcast publishers, they're not exactly rolling around in cash. So they're sort of a little worried about upfront ad buys as a result. They're a little worried about where the principal stake comes from. So I think we're going to see a bit of the push and pull here. I think a lot of the innovation is going to come from independent makers who are working at a smaller scale, and hopefully they get to move up market over time to experiment at grander levels. But it's unclear to me like where the next thing is going to come from, because it's hard to sort of plot out the trajectories of things like this.
Thinking about the roles that I think many of the platforms in the podcast space are starting to take on. I think in the beginning, everybody was trying to figure it out. Everybody was rushing to the market, creating content, trying to find their way. But curious if you also feel that there's starting to become more defined swim lanes in the space. I think, you know, there are certain podcast production companies that are starting to develop a reputation for the content they're creating. There's technology players sort of emerging and solidifying their self in the space. And then I think there's sort of these best-in-class creators that regardless of where they ended up, you know they would have a following.
So let me put it this way. This is my litmus test. If it's still possible that a person working or a team working with relatively few resources to develop something that can comparably compete with, you know, something like This American Life or, you know, anything that comes up from the Slate Network, if an unknown person can still sort of take that attention and to pop, then you still have a situation in which the swim lanes, no matter how defined they are, can always be challenged. And I think we still exist in a space where that can happen, that the next best-in-class creator, that the next team of people who will build sort of the next big podcast company, it's still very much open and possible. There are no sort of structural limitations that prevents that from happening. We might have seen the formation of different companies and an industry structure that reduces the probability of that happening, but the possibility that is still very much alive. And to me, I think that's still an interesting promise of the space.
That's what keeps us coming back.
Right. So, Nick, what is the hot pod of the day? What are you loving listening to?
I'm actually working on a review for Vulture right now on this new fiction podcast from the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, is written, directed, and stars Caitlin Prest, who famously produced The Heart, which was a Radiotopia show about sort of intimacy and emotion. And it's a really interesting audio fiction series. I'm sort of fascinated to think through it and write about it. And that's all I've been thinking about today, I'm afraid.
What is the thing you want to see made yesterday?
Great question. You know, part the cop-out answer here is that I'm always looking for something that I didn't think about, like something that surprises me and something that, like, you know, one of the things I always fear whenever I go to the bookstore or look at that fall TV lineup is that I'm going to look at a wall of things that I've heard of before, that this thing doesn't feel particularly surprising, that that's a copy of that or an imitation of that.
So, Nick, we're going to end the show with our favorite game. What would you kill? What would you buy? What would you do yourself?
I would kill video. Like social video. This is really stressing me out all the time, every time I see it. I would buy a public radio station in nowhere America, because I still think those are really beautiful gems in this country. I would DIY a TV station. That would be fun.
Ooh. Well, Nick Kwa, Hot Pod, read it.
If people want to reach you, subscribe to the newsletter, how do they do that?
You can find me on hotpotnews.com, or you can find me on Twitter at NWQUA, Q-U-A-H.
Nick, leave our listeners with three must-listen-to podcasts going into the weekend.
I would listen to The Rewatchables if you don't already listen to that. I would listen to the new Serial season, which continues to be super interesting. And I would listen to this really interesting episode from a podcast called Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People by the comedian Chris Gethard. Yeah. And the most recent episode, he spoke to a person who survived the Las Vegas shooting exactly a year ago this week. And it's a gorgeous conversation.
Wow. Nick Kwa, thank you so much.
Thank you, Nick.
Take it easy.
So big thanks to Nick Kwa. Make sure you check out the Hot Pod newsletter. It's where we're getting all of our information on the podcast industry on the regular.
I've been a reader of Hot Pod for years now, and he's been kind of this voice and this perspective on the industry. And as it's grown, kind of made me think about audio, not just podcasting, in a different way. So thank you again, Nick Kwa, all of our friends and family at Panoply.
Our producer, Dana, will be back in 2 weeks.
See ya, Adlandia.
Full disclosure, our opinions are our own.